On this week's episode of Video Culture, we'll talk courtroom comedies with My Cousin Vinny and Trial and Error. So let's all rise and come to order.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to the courtroom comedy edition of Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And today, this week, we obviously have two movies dealing in the courtroom by the same director.
Yeah, it's by director Jonathan Lynn.
Yep.
These are two courtroom comedies, which, you know, surprisingly, is not a big genre of film.
No, it is not.
When we first thought of the idea of doing it, we thought, oh, we'll do My Cousin Vinny and something else. We actually kind of had to think for a little while to think of what to go with it, because we didn't want to go too obvious.
Well, there are a lot of movies that feature, you know, things in a courtroom. There's obviously movies that are about a courtroom, you know, that's their whole movie. I mean, John Grisham made a career out of it.
Very true.
But like a comedy, like what happened, you know, there's comedic things that happen like in courtrooms, but it's not the whole entire movie. You know, where the setting is almost entirely taking place in the courtroom about the trial. My Cousin Vinny was filmed in 1990, filmed and released in 1992, and Trial and Error was released in 1997.
It was.
So, but even though that they were directed by the same director, Jonathan Lynn. Now, Jonathan Lynn, he's directed other movies such as Clue, Nuns on the Run, The Distinguished Gentleman, Sergeant Bilko, The Whole Nine Yards, and The Fighting Temptations.
I gotta say, some of those movies are really good.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm a big fan of Clue.
Fan of Clue.
Yeah.
I mean, Clue is one of those movies I think that, you know, we probably should cover on this show.
It's a movie we will eventually do some sort of and a whodunit or mystery.
Yeah.
And Clue will have to be part of that.
Definitely. I mean, yeah. That is definitely, I think, kind of a cult classic, cult genre movie for sure.
Oh, yeah. It's really a movie that's grown in esteem, but we're not here to talk about Clue, though we easily could, and we almost slipped into it.
All right. Let's not
we
go.
We almost fell into that Clue quicksand.
All right. So it's a red herring.
It is a red herring. But the interesting thing about My Cousin Vinny and these films in general is that Jonathan Lynn has a legal background.
Yeah. Jonathan Lynn, I'll go ahead. I mean, it's part of my notes, but and things. But he actually has a degree in law from Cambridge. Now, that law degree is, you know, of course, like the British law, which varies a lot different than our law, especially in dealing with what happens in the courtroom, the procedures, if you will. Even though that we may have similar laws against, you know, say like murder, how the law is conducted or how the court is conducted is vastly different. But Jonathan Lynn still, you know, studied American law, and I mean, he didn't write the films whatsoever, but he contributed, you know, to both films kind of as much as he could. I mean, but one of the things is that he wanted to make My Cousin Vinny as accurate as possible.
Yes.
As courtroom accurate as possible.
To me, that's one of the most kind of enjoyable things about the film. But let's briefly talk about what My Cousin Vinny is about.
So if you've never seen My Cousin Vinny, if you've lived in a hole, if you didn't grow up like in the 90s, if you're younger, maybe not familiar with Vincent. What is
Vincent Gambini?
Well, Vincent Gambini, but he has a middle name too, yeah, right? Like Vincent LaGuardia Gambini.
What a great name!
I know, right? LaGuardia.
That's it. In our video culture hierarchy of amazing names, that's pretty high up there.
Yeah, and along with Mona Lisa Vito.
Yeah,
yeah,
some great names. Yeah, they really, really are. Yeah.
So. Ralph Macchio and, plays
another guy who's not Ralph Macchio are driving through, they're basically through the American South during the summer.
His name is Stan Rothenstein is the actor's name. He plays Mitchell Whitfield. Yeah. And they're driving and they're like, you know, mid 60s, convertible.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're somewhere in Alabama and they stop at a grocery store to
pick up supplies.
Pick up supplies because they're on their way to the beach and just hanging out after they, you know, graduated college.
And Ralph Macchio accidentally shoplifts something. It's completely unintentional.
Yeah, a can of tuna. He had too much stuff in his hand. He put the can of tuna in his pocket.
And he walked out with it, you know. But as they're driving away, they get pulled over by the cops. And the cops arrest them. They think they're arrested because they were caught shoplifting. What actually happened was there was a murder that happened right after they left.
Yeah, because he immediately starts apologizing, like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. And it's kind of like, okay, you're coming with me.
Yeah.
And then he finds out, like, in the confession, like, he's like, so when did you shoot the clerk? And he's like, I shot the clerk. And then all of a sudden, they have a confession. And then, you know, they get put on trial.
It's kind of like those old screwball comedies of misunderstandings.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a big misunderstanding basically has them sort of confess to murder.
Right.
And then recant.
Right.
And because they're in rural Alabama and they're city folk.
Right. They're Yankees.
Yeah, they're regarded with suspicion and distrust.
Mm-hmm.
And they get thrown in jail.
Yeah. And so who bails them? Who are they going to get to defend them? Yeah. So, Ralph Macchio's character, who's Bill Gambini, right? So he's a Gambini. He says, "We'll call my cousin Vinny."
Yeah, he's got a law degree. He's been a lawyer for 6 years.
Yeah, we'll call my cousin Vinny. He'll bail us out.
Yeah, and the surprise there is that even though cousin Vinny has been a lawyer for 6 years, he hasn't actually been practicing law for 6 years.
He's just a litigator.
Yeah. Which he basically means, does a lot of out-of-court stuff.
Yeah, like insurance, like, you know, the kind of guys that you see on TV where it's like, have you been in an accident? And, you know, call this guy, because mainly those guys don't go to court. Yeah. They settle claims and they present the evidence to say, hey, this person, you know, you need to pay up. And so they settle out of court.
So his cousin Vinny drives down to Alabama and bringing his beautiful girlfriend in tow, whose name is Mona Lisa Vito. Again, an amazing name.
Played by the beautiful,
luminous Marissa Tomei.
Oh my gosh.
She won an Oscar for this, Ryan.
Yeah, she did. She won Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of her first roles, her first big major role, really.
And they come down to Alabama. He basically admits to the boys that he's never actually gone to trial before.
Right.
That he is just he's one of those kind of settlement lawyers.
Right. And but he convinces now look, I'm going to say one of the we mentioned, you know, just previously that the one of the things that makes this a good movie is because everything in this movie could happen and it's legally as accurate as possible.
It's sound, yeah. There's no exaggeration. There's nothing that's, you know, when you watch things that, when you know about a subject and you watch a movie about a subject, you're like, oh, that can't happen. That's a bunch of bull crap. They don't actually do that. This movie, you can, if you know about law, you can watch it and say, well, that's mostly accurate.
Right. If you've been in a courtroom, you're like, wow, this really could happen. The other thing I think that's really great about this movie is the casting.
The casting is great.
Of this movie is almost as perfect as it could be for any movie. I don't think that there's any character that's really out of place or who I would think that's not a good actor or didn't play a good part. I think everybody is extremely well cast.
Yeah. No one sticks out. It's a wonderful ensemble. Yeah.
Fred Gwynne, who plays, you know, people know Fred Gwynne from The Munsters, playing Herman Munster on television. But he was also in the movie The Cotton Club, Pet Sematary, Car 54, Where Are You? Television series in the 50s. Yeah. And he plays the judge,
yeah,
this Southern, but like very, you know, went to Yale, like very astute judge.
He's a learned man, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I think that one of the things about this movie is that they play the South as if, you know, they don't play him like some country bumpkins kind of people. Like, he's very smart. The person that plays the prosecuting attorney, Lane Smith, who's the actor's name, that's his actor's name, Jim Trotter III.
Yeah, played by Lane Smith.
Yeah, playing by Lane Smith. So he plays a very, like, astute, you know, very smart, you know, character for your lawyer. It's somebody who you can definitely picture as a Southern lawyer.
Yeah.
He's not very corrupt. He's not, like, you know, stupid. He doesn't say any sort of, like, offhand remarks. Yeah. I'm from the South, and I'm like, I've met Southern lawyers, and that's exactly how they act.
Yeah. It's very, those two characters especially are portrayed very normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not really stereotypes. They're just normal guys who happen to be from the South.
Right. And also, I want to make a correction before we move on. Mitchell Whitfield is the actor's name.
Okay.
Stan Rosenstein is definitely the character's name.
He'll always be not Ralph Macchio to me.
Yeah, right. Well, no, yeah. But Stan Rosenstein, because he was supposed to be like a, you know, he's definitely Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So
let's just go down the list, okay?
Yeah, let's go through the cast.
So Joe Pesci is playing the defending attorney. You have defending Ralph Macchio and Mitchell Whitfield. Then you have Marissa Tomei playing Mona Lisa Vito, who's Joe Pesci's, you know, girlfriend.
The auto mechanic.
Right. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Then we have Fred Gwynne, who's just a lovely, lovely character playing the judge Chamberlain Holler. And, you know, and then you have Lane Smith, you know, playing the prosecuting attorney, along with, Bruce McGill.
Yeah. From the last Boy Scout in, National Lampoon's Animal House.
And MacGyver.
MacGyver.
Yeah, the original MacGyver. I think he was in one episode of the new MacGyver, actually, too.
I've never seen the new one, but I'll take your word for it. But Bruce McGill's great. He was in, like I said, in a ton of things.
Animal House, Wildcats, Last Boy Scout, Time Cop, Black Sheep, Collateral, Ali, The Sum of Our Fears, Quantum Leap. He played God in Quantum Leap,
That's
guys.
Right, he did. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he plays the sheriff. And then you also have this guy, Austin Pendleton. Do you remember Austin Pendleton?
Is he the stuttering lawyer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Gibbons plays the stuttering, like the public defender.
He's a great character actor too. He's in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
He's really funny in this.
Yeah. Some nerds like me know him from Short Circuit.
That's what I always think of, to be honest with you.
Yes. Yes, yeah. He plays the main guy who's head of the, you know, whatever that lab is or whatever, who's always yelling it to get the robot back. Anyway,
yeah. When I go by the picture, that's what I picture him yelling about Johnny Five. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or yelling at Steve Guttenberg. Whatever. But anyway, no, he plays a really, really fantastic, like, stuttering public defender.
Yeah, it's one of the gags in the film is that you think he's going to be this hyper-competent lawyer, but then if you find out he gets nervous in front of crowds and stutters, so that's why he'd be a terrible public defender,
right?
Because he can't speak in front of people.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because what happens is, you know, the other character, you know, in the movie, Stan Rosenstein, he gets cold feet with using Vinny, and he's like, you know what, we're going to trial. So I'm going to use the public defender because I don't trust that this guy can get the job done and actually get me off, you know.
And that's one of the funny things about the movie is the reveal that even though he is a hyper competent lawyer, he is just bad in front of crowds.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, Vinny is not a hyper competent lawyer, but is great in front of people.
Right.
He's got the gift of gab, if you will.
Well, I mean, he reveals that, it took him like 6 times to pass the bar exam. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're like, what kind of guy is this that, can't pass the bar the first time? You know what I mean? It's kind of like getting a doctor, like a doctor who passed with a C is still a doctor, right?
Yes.
You know?
One of the things we don't like to think about too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. But I think the movie certainly carries himself. You know, Vinny winds up like really building an incredible case of doubt into, and then even uses Mona Lisa Vito as the, as the expert witness, on cars, because it has to do with one of the cars, the getaway car. And so, he has a picture of the tire tracks, and then that leads into a whole thing about the suspension and the even tracks and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, if you know about cars, all of that is deadly accurate as well. I mean, to know about positive traction and to know about independent rear suspension and to know about Michelin, what is the R225, or whatever, P225, 75R, 17, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's all really, it's all very, really accurate.
Well, and that's one thing that's great about this movie is the quality's in the detail.
Yeah.
One thing I love about the way this resolves the movie is what Vinny ends up being good at is arguing.
Right.
And being contrary.
Right.
And if you think about it, that's how a lot of legal cases are won. It's not, legal cases aren't won by proving innocence. Mm-hmm. They're won by creating doubt.
Right.
Because you have to be found guilty with beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
And that the idea of reasonable doubt is what gets a lot of people off of criminal charges.
Right. Well, I mean, Vinny knew that they were innocent. He just had to find a way that these eyewitnesses sounded so convincing and the evidence was so convincing. He knew that there was a way that, like, there's no way that those people could say that these people did it, because he knew. He's like, this is, my nephew. Like, he would never do that.
Yeah.
But the one thing I love about this movie is that you get to see, like, law kind of, you get to follow the law kind of from Vinny's eyes, from Vinny's perspective, and the case kind of develops, because as you're watching the pretrial or the, not really the pretrial, but
really,
it's really
just the trial process.
The arraignment, right? Yes. The arraignment process, and he didn't cross-examine any of the witnesses or whatever. And it's kind of like, you kind of feel lost as much as Vinny. Like, what do I do? Where do I object? Where do I ask a question? Where do I do this kind of stuff?
Like, you think from like the synopsis, Vinny would be like the zany character that's kind of like the hero. But in a lot of ways, Vinny's the audience identification character.
Right.
Because we don't know anything about the legal system, really, and Vinny knows more than we do, but he's still lost about the trial and arraignment process. So as he goes into this, he screws up, and they're like, why did you do that? Why did you do this? He's like, well, I didn't know.
Right.
And the movie does a wonderful job of doling out bits of legal information throughout the entire film in a way that's entertaining and interesting, so you learn along with Vinny about how it goes.
Right.
It's really brilliant in its structure in that way.
Well, and it's not just about that. I mean, there's other, like, funny things that happen, like the way he dresses, wearing his like black leather jacket.
Yeah.
Looking like, from a goon from Jersey.
With his chain and his turtleneck. Yeah.
Yeah. Like looking from some goon in his cowboy boots, and he gets on to the way he dresses. So that's like an ongoing joke about the way he dresses. And then one day he has to come in wearing like a ridiculous tux
because this trial suit got ruined by accident.
Yeah, that tux was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I mean, and then, or the fact that like wherever that he goes, he can't get a good night's rest because he gets woken up in the morning at like for some unknown noise coming from somewhere.
Yeah, that's one of the more obvious gags about the South is that there's always like a crow crowing or like pigs oinking. Or like a whistle
going
from,
by,
train going by, or like a whistle from a factory, you know.
The funniest was the screech owl, though.
Yeah, there's an owl that screeches.
The screech owl.
Yeah.
So he's like, they're out in the woods. He's like, the prosecuting attorney, like Jim Trotter, is going to let him use this hunting, lodge that's out in the middle of the woods to get a nice sound, night's rest, and then he wakes up to the screeching owl.
Yeah. And he thinks it's some sort of intruder. Yeah.
Like, shoots the shotguns a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hilarious.
And another thing I really like about this movie is Marissa Tomei in it. Like I said, she's wonderful because she's obviously very beautiful.
Yeah.
But she's also shown to be really competent about what she knows about. Like, right. She's very supportive of Vinny. She's not, like, shrill or nagging. Mm-hmm. And it'd be really easy to make a character named Mona Lisa Vito in this kind of movie be shrill and nagging and a ditz.
Well, she did. I mean, there was the one scene where she did kind of nag at him. And, you know, the biological
But it goes
scene.
back into Caribbean. She wants to have a family with him. She wants to, you know, grow up with him, basically.
Well, and she even apologizes for even, like, bringing it up or whatever, right?
Like, she's super supportive, and she's shown to be very competent, despite being very youthful. And because it's just, it defies what you think it's going to be.
Right. Well, her, I mean, and Joe Pesci, you know, and you know, Vincent, they had excellent chemistry.
Yeah, considering there's a huge age difference, and if we first see it, you think, oh, that's a little weird. He's so much older than she is.
Right.
But you don't really notice it after about 5 minutes because they have such good chemistry together. They're really adorable together.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. I mean, you know, you almost want to watch them, you know, go on and see what they're going to do. You
like
know,
have adventures. Yeah. Like go on vacation. Like you could have a whole comedy series with them just going off and doing things together.
Yeah. Cause their banter. And then the whole thing about the torque wrench, you know, scene in the bedroom was, they really played off each other, I think, like really well.
And she has to deliver a lot of technical jargon. Like you see, they're talking about torque wrenches and automobile transmissions. And not only does she nail like the delivery of it, but she believes she knows what she's talking about. She does a really good job with that.
Right. And I know even though she's talking about positive traction and like independent rail suspension, everything that she did to talk about it, she didn't just say the lines. Like she it was like a part of her character, which I thought was like really, really awesome.
Because often when you see people regurgitate those kind of things in movies, you can tell that they're just saying words on a page.
Right. Well, the same way the guy that talked about, like, what model, you know, did he find out the chemical composition of the rubber, you know, he says this big, long, technical HP model, whatever. Yeah. And it's like, that's the way that you would think that somebody would deliver that line. But that was also his character. He was very sort of scientific and dry.
But it didn't, but it also didn't feel like he actually knew it.
Right.
It felt like he was an actor reading something he memorized.
Right, yeah, this is very true. Well, I mean, he is kind of a character actor. Yeah.
But you know, there's always been, and I don't mean to jump ahead of your notes again, but there's always been this controversy about why did Marissa Tomei win the Oscar for this?
Right. Because
there was a big controversy about that at the time.
Right. Well, and it is true, a lot of comedies, you know, don't really win Oscars. You know what I mean?
It's true, especially not for the kind of role she had. But when I go back and really look at it, and especially now, becoming so steeped in film as I am now, she really nails that stuff in a way that most actors don't. Like, so you believe her. And it's even though it should be farcical, she 100% sells really difficult technical jargon. Like she really understands it. And that's all in her acting.
Yeah.
And it's really quite remarkable. She is really great in this.
You really do believe that she's Mona Lisa Vito.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not even, she is from Brooklyn, and she has a little bit of an accent if you've ever heard Marissa talk, but she doesn't talk in that way.
Yeah.
She imitated people that she knows. Like, she's like, my mom talks that way, you know? So she knows and she knows how those people act. I think that's what lend to the character is that she really knows and can identify with the character that she was playing. Even though that she wasn't that character, she was like, she's seen that girl, you know, down the street, or she was friends of a friend of that girl or whatever. So she understands all of the mannerisms, the way that person talks, the way that person walks, you know, how they're going to say certain things. And it is, the delivery is everything. And if you, the time that she spends on the stand, you know, and all of the sort of physical comedy of like trying to get her up and sit in the stand.
Yeah. Cause she's mad at Vinny at the time.
Right. Yeah. And they almost have like the bailiff has to like force her to sit and take testimony.
Yeah. It's a legitimately great performance. And I think it was so good that people believe that she was you know, that character instead of just an actress playing a part very convincingly.
It was also, I think I remember reading about whoever read her name, like, didn't pronounce it correctly. And so that's why they also kind of thought that maybe there was some other actress's name on there.
I've heard those conspiracy theories. I don't believe them.
No, if it was incorrect, they would have corrected it. Because that's what happened in 2017.
Yeah, with Moonlight. Yeah. They said the wrong thing.
Yeah.
That's so embarrassing.
That was so super awkward. You owe me a Coke. Jinx, by the way. Jinx.
We've been doing this too long. We're starting to complete each other's sentences.
I know. I mean, I cannot say more good things about this movie. I just absolutely incredible. Authentic, the realism, the way that you feel like you're in the courtroom, the way that you feel like you're following Vinny, and you can follow along in the sort of like legal process without, I feel like, watching movies like A Few Good Men, it's like it gets very sort of technical. Yeah, you don't really know what's going
dry,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're just like all this weird stuff I don't know, but like, the way it's presented doesn't make you feel like an idiot.
Yeah. Like I said, the structure in it is amazing.
Yeah.
Because it gives you all, you learn stuff, but you learn it gradually and in a fun way. Mm-hmm. So you learn stuff. You feel like you know more about the process by the time you're done. But at the same time, it's such a fun movie. It's super funny.
Yep.
It's got so many great jokes in it.
Right.
Every character is likable in some way. Like there's not one character you don't at least want to spend a little bit of time with.
No, I mean the most unlikable character was the character who stiffed Mona Lisa Vito $200.
Yeah,
but that turned into like a whole comedy thing because it was kind of like Vinny was like, "Oh, you got the money? Okay, show me the money. Come back when you got the money." You know, it's like.
That's not $20 with a bunch of wrapped around a bunch of ones, is it?
Yeah, right. And he was like, "Oh man," you know. So it's kind of like it kind of. I mean, and then eventually he winds up like shows up with a $20 and then he just gives him one punch and then it's over. But it's like even that was like a bit of fun, you know. In it,
it's all super. It's lighthearted.
Yeah. Now I remember you saying though one time when we first brought up this movie about what movies that we should watch, and we brought up My Cousin Vinny. You said one of the greatest things we've mentioned, I think, on another show. You said it's a watchable movie. It's just a very watchable movie.
It's so smooth and so fun, and it feels light and fluffy.
Yeah.
But you're actually learning things, and it's got great performances. Like I said, and you learn about the legal process. So it's really a miraculous film. And I think that's one reason why it's so beloved and revered and highly remembered. Is because it's both meaty, but it doesn't feel like a meaty film. It feels like a light confectionery type thing. Like it feels like it should be like a trifle that you forget about,
right?
But it sticks with you,
right?
It's got substance,
right? Yeah, like it has the perfect sort of movie arc where you have like the conflict, like oh wait, they're in trouble, and then you're like, then they go to trial, like. Oh, wait, they're really in trouble.
Yeah.
Then how are we going to get out of this? And then you start, like, kind of getting the, like, they might actually get out of this. Yeah. And it's fun to watch Vinny kind of, like, learn the legal system and then watch them just, you know, whenever all the witnesses, he comes home and he's like, okay, I'm through with this guy. You know, it's just like, you know, he knows he's won. That confidence that he starts to build, witness after witness after witness.
You start rooting for him almost like it's a sports movie.
Right, yeah.
But I think in the best comedies are movies where you really like the characters.
Yeah.
And it's impossible not to like Vinny and Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
They are such lovable characters that you want to hang out with them and see them succeed.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ralph Macchio and Whitfield, I mean, they kind of take a back seat to this whole thing, really.
But they provide a bit of realism, which you need, because you have to have stakes. Yeah. Or doesn't that's that, if you don't have stakes, it feels weightless, which is what we'll get into when we get into that other movie. But if you don't have a bit of realism, then it doesn't matter. And you have to have that bit of realism, a little bit of worry to be invested in what happens.
Right.
And Ralph Macchio and the other gentleman nail it.
Mitchell Whitfield.
I'll get it one day, but still, he's not Ralph Macchio to me.
He was in Sergeant Bilko, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, as in 2007 as Donatello. He was in Dharma and Greg, the TV show, Murder, She Wrote, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I think he does a lot of voice acting.
He's had a good career.
Yeah. So, that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2007 as Donatello was a voice acting
name. Yeah, it's a CGI animated film, if I remember correctly.
Right. Just want to get that out there. You know, give credit to that guy.
He wasn't wearing a suit. He wasn't wearing like a Donatello head or anything.
You know, apologies. You're not just not Ralph Macchio guy.
No. If you're listening to this, sir, no offense.
Right.
If you want to come on the show, please email us.
I think it's a beloved movie. There's not one person that I mentioned this that doesn't like that movie. I've never met anybody that has not loved that movie. And matter of fact, and before I'll mention this before we go to the next movie that we'll talk about, is that I looked, I was watching a Twitter feed of somebody that said, give me your top five, movies of all time. You know, if you could watch only pick five movies and you can only watch these five movies and that's it.
Yeah.
One of the movies that kept coming up that was surprising was My Cousin Vinny. I saw it at least three or four times.
And that's like,
I was looking at about 40 responses or so.
And I remember thinking, I remember you telling me this earlier, it was weird, but then I rewatched it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why that is. This movie is great.
Yeah. It's kind of like watching a really good football game, and watching it over and over and over. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things.
I mean, it's really a perfect little comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
Yeah. So let's move on. So 1997, we have this other movie that was directed by the same director, different writer.
Yeah.
Made by a different film production company.
Yeah.
The first one was made by like Fox, was distributed by Fox. This one is distributed by New Line Cinema.
Yes.
And it's Trial and Error. And so it stars Jeff Daniels, Charlize Theron, Rip Torn, and Michael Richards.
Okay. Before we get too into it, I just want to say, we record these things in advance, guys. The great Rip Torn passed away a couple days ago. He's a wonderful actor. He's one of the few bright spots in this movie. So, Rip, we love you. Godspeed.
Rip Torn was in Men in Black, Summer Rental, Dodgeball, Freddy Got Fingered, and his last feature film was in 2013 with the movie Johnny Kid. But he's made made a few TV appearances after that. A lot of people, may know him. I know him most from Summer Rental, where he, played the shrimp boat captain, that taught John Candy how to sail, and Scully, lovable character. And, he was in a lot of things before that, as a supporting actor. He will be, he was 88 years old when he passed. We should all be so lucky. Yeah. So, and I think that he had a wonderful movie career, and it's really great that we still get to enjoy his movies. But yes, sir. God bless. So anyway, yeah, and it's really odd that I watched this movie. I watched Trial and Error. And then the next morning, woke up to the news that he passed away. It was so strange.
And I remember thinking, what I'm going to talk about is one of the few bright spots is him being just over the top and broad and being just a real complete bastard.
Yeah, he kind of plays this like kind of Texas kind of con man, and he's actually being defended. So unlike, there's a lot of compare and contrast to these two movies because they're both like legal movies. But unlike My Cousin Vinny, where we had innocent and known innocent characters that we're defending, he's actually a con man, and the lawyer's known to be a con man, right?
Well, let's not get too... I'm sorry I derailed us there, but I had to bring that up. So let's go back. So it stars Michael Richards, Jeff Daniels, Charlize Theron.
So Jeff Daniels plays this, hotshot lawyer who just got named partner, at this L.A. firm, got the corner office, Michael Richards plays his like goofball friend,
who's an actor.
Plays an actor in the show. Is his name in the movie is Richard Rietti. That's an odd name too.
Yeah, it's no Stanley Spadowski.
This is true. Jeff Daniels plays Charlie Tuttle. Why Tuttle? That's such an odd name.
Yeah, it's a pretty good movie name. Like, it sticks with you.
Yeah, and he gets asked a special favor by one of the other, you know, guys who made him partner. Like, hey, go defend my friend. Like, you just got to go ask for a continuance in Nevada.
Yeah, and also this guy's going to be his future stepfather.
Right.
Or father-in-law, not stepfather. Father-in-law, yeah. Father-in-law, sorry.
Yeah. And so he's like, but I'm getting married this week. I can't go. He's like, no, you just got to go get a continuance. Like, it's no big deal. And then he goes down there. Oh, and I also want to mention that playing in this movie, there's also another carryover, Austin Pendleton, who played the stuttering public defender, and My Cousin Vinny is now the judge in this movie.
He plays the judge in this film.
Non-stuttering judge.
Yeah, non-stuttering. That's an important distinction. Yes. He does not stutter in real life.
Yes.
But so, yeah, his bachelor party was supposed to happen the night of...
Actually, he does stutter in real life. But yeah,
does he really?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. Oh, well, my apologies. You wouldn't know. He's really good, so that's surprising to me.
Yeah. But that was one of my notes, but that's okay.
See, I try not to cheat and read the notes ahead of time. To be surprised by these things. Right. I want to learn stuff too, Ryan.
Okay, all right. Continue. Sorry.
So he's going to get married. He's going to have a bachelor party, but he has to postpone it because he's got to go do this thing, and that makes his buddy, my Michael Richards character, sad.
Right.
So Michael Richards basically shows up there in this podunk town and surprises him, be like, hey, we're going to throw your bachelor party tonight.
Yeah.
He's like, and Jeff Daniels' character's like, I can't do this. I've got to be in court in the morning. He's like, oh, it'll be fine. Mm. And they get him drunk.
Right.
He gets in a fight. Mm. And long story short, he can't make it to court.
Right.
And he's going to disappoint his new father-in-law. He's going to screw up his first big assignment, you know. So basically, Michael Richards impersonates him in the court.
Right.
So they can just go through this simple little procedure and have it not be a debacle. Mm. But instead of it just being a continuance, which just means it'll be pushed off to a different day, the judge is like, no, this defendant's a scumbag. We're going to trial immediately.
Yeah, so we put this off two or three times. Like, we're ready. The court's ready. Like, we need to do this thing. And the judge doesn't have, you know, anything to say. And you know, Michael Richards' character, like Richard Rietti, like, who's playing Tuttle, like, doesn't know how to defend that. Doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know. Like, he thought he was just going to, like, play it. And he's like, I'm an actor. I can improv it, right? Yeah. You know?
And before you know it, he's basically having to pretend to be his lawyer friend in this real court scenario, which, if you think about it, it's a pretty good idea for a courtroom comedy.
It is, because, I mean, a lot of lawyers, a lot of people say, well, if you know, you got to be a good actor, right? Like, you got to goose the jury, and you got to, like, put on a performance and put on a show. So that's what, you know, the character Richard Rietti was trying to do. Like, I'll just play this. You give me the lines. Like, you know, so once Jeff Daniels' character, once Charlie Tuttle, like, you know, gets up out of his stupor and you know, the drugs and the alcohol wear off, you know, he's like, well, you can just feed me the lines and I'll just do it. You know, I'll just go out there and perform it, you know. And
of course, nothing goes right. It's very Three Stooges-like.
Oh, super, super. It's just, like, super ridiculous.
Yeah. And so Jeff Daniels ends up getting thrown out of court because it's one of the few realistic things. They're like, you can't just have an assistant be here without telling the court you're going to bring an assistant. Who is this guy?
And the assistant can't speak up like a lawyer can. Yeah. They can't object. They can't ask questions or cross-examine. Like, you got to, you know, like she said, like, you got to have, you know, he's like, bring your bar card up here, you know, whatever. Like, you know, you can't just go in there and pretend to be a lawyer, you know, whatever.
And those little details were the most interesting part of this film. I'm going to say something kind of hacky right now. This movie was a trial to get through, and it felt like an error to watch it.
I would agree. The most redeeming quality about this movie was Charlize Theron, who plays Billy.
Yeah.
And she plays this, like, waitress character who, like, really kind of looks after... Jeff Daniels' character looks after Charlie. even though that, like, he has to tell her that he's an actor because he's playing, because he has to pretend he's
the other guy. They basically change places.
Yeah, they kind of change places.
And I will say, Charlize Theron, it's one of her first major films.
Right.
She's, and it's kind of the romantic part of it's adorable. It's cute. I mean, it's not as good as My Cousin Vinny in that respect. Right. Like, so the other bright spot is Rip Torn's pretty funny as the sleazy, like, con man.
Yeah.
He gets to be, you know, just slimy. Like, you're stereotypical, like, slimy, like, you know, grifter.
Yeah.
And Rip Torn with his gravelly voice and his sneaky smile is pretty funny.
Yeah. He's kind of like a used car salesman who gives you a sob story about how he bought this car from a little old lady who barely drove it, and she really didn't want to give it away. And, you know, that's the kind of character he played. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He has a moment like that where he tells the story about being in an orphanage and about how he almost died when he was in an orphanage. That's how he doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. Right. And really, it's that part's fine, but it's such a very small part of the film. So much of this just does not work.
In watching it, I kind of knew, like, I kind of figured out, like, middle of the way, like, kind of where they were going with it. The courtroom scenes are not as accurate. They're really, like, a lot of shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Like, at one point, Michael Richards' character, like, Richard Rietti, like, he wants to, you know, kind of pursue. He kind of sees, like, a different path to, like, winning the case. He kind of gets caught up in the whole, like, playing the lawyer and wants to, like, really, like, improv it, like, a little bit more. And, Charlie is more like, no, you need to bring it back. Like, don't go off script, you know, don't do this. And so in trying to control him, he kind of gets called for contempt. He gets thrown out of court. So he has to sneak back in to see what's going on, climbs up in the roof, falls through, the ceiling, then really gets kicked out, has to be like 100 feet.
At the point where Jeff Daniels falls through the roof,
he
lands on like the table breaks, and he gets up and starts screaming, objection or whatever.
No, he's at the defense rest.
And it's just so over the top. I remember at that moment, I literally stopped the video and looked and to see how much time was left in it. And it was like, oh, I forgot an hour left.
Well, and the fact the fact that the judge, like, you know, was just like, no, we're going to continue. I don't care. We're going to continue. We're going to push forward. We're going to get done with this trial. So it's almost like he's feeling the same way we are. Like, we just want this to end. We just want it to be over.
In all fairness, he's good in it, too. Like, he does a good job as the judge. He's enjoyable. But it's just, like, little parts of it that are good. The overall thing is just a huge misfire.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but the whole point, what I was trying to say before is that I kind of got the point of the idea, because the con man, the Rip Torn's character, he plays a guy that he sold people like in a magazine or something like that and says, you can have an engraved copper,
portrait of Abraham Lincoln.
Portrait of Abraham Lincoln for $17.95 or whatever, and then sends them a penny.
Yeah, because technically it's an engraved copper portrait of Abraham Lincoln.
It's a stamped. But anyway, the point of it is he's ripping people off. He's sending people a penny. Oh, no.
It's the most ridiculous scam in the world.
Yeah, he's sending people a penny for, almost $18.
Yeah.
And so, it's a scam. And so all these people, testify, that's exactly what happened. And it's just like, how are you going to defend that? How is somebody going to defend that? But the point I think in the movie tries to make is that we all, lie a little bit to ourselves. That's if you watch the closing arguments from that Michael Richards gives, and I'll say Michael Richards because
he does not play a character.
His character's name is Richard Rietti, but he's playing the other guy, which is, Charlie Tuttle. So it's kind of weird. But in those closing arguments, you're like, oh, well, that's what this movie's all about. Because you realize that, Jeff Daniels kind of realized, he meets Charlie and kind of falls in love with her. And it's kind of like, after he gets kicked out of the courtroom, he's kind of like, that his life is kind of a sham, that he's just, pretending. Like, he just, you go from being valedictorian to these other things, but it's not really what you want out of life or whatever. Yeah. And you're all just like lying to yourself for things because that's where everybody thinks you should be or whatever. And it's a really kind of odd message for the whole movie.
Yeah. And at least it's interesting. And if the movie had been better in other ways, it might have made it worthwhile.
I think if the movie ended right where they're in, or the movie like got to a close, kind of like right where they were in, where they got the plea bargain deal, you remember? And they're in the lawn, and then like the sprinklers come on or whatever, and they're sitting there sharing a bourbon. You could have resolved it right then, and then like him go back to, you know, California or whatever, and realize that like his wife getting mad, or his fiance getting mad over like, you know, what
silly
flowers.
Stuff.
Yeah, silly stuff.
Yeah,
he's like,
it's,
you know,
super
what?
Obvious in that respect. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. And, you know, they could have done
something.
He
runs back
to
Charlie's throne.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
But you're right. And that moment you're talking about, when that moment comes, there's still like 30 minutes left in the movie.
Yeah, and you're like, what is going to happen? And then you go back to trial. And you're like,
and I was just like, happening? I was just like, man, I do not care. And the movie is only a little bit over 90 minutes. And it feels so much longer than what it is. But
anyway.
And really, one of the problems is Michael Richards. And let me just, we've said a lot of nice things about Michael Richards on this podcast. He, you know, we liked him in UHF. We liked him in Airheads.
Well, I really liked his slapstick comedy that he did. I mean,
physical comedy.
Yeah,
stuff,
his physical comedy, like the scene that he did, the gangster scene, or the mobster.
When
he's
on an audition, he does a scene from a gangster woman in an audition, and he acts like getting beat up and murdered.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
With no other actors, just him.
It was so funny.
And it's a very Kramer kind of Stanley Spadowski kind of thing, and it works. Yeah. But when we praise Michael Richards, as we have on this show. When we praised him, he was not the lead of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
He would show up, you know, flail his limbs around, be funny, and then he'd let the movie be led by someone else.
Right.
And here, he's expected to carry some dramatic weight, and he just does not pull it off.
Well, you also have to remember, this is just a few years after Dumb and Dumber. I mean, Dumb and Dumber was, what, 1994?
And Seinfeld had just ended.
Right. So, it was 1994. I mean, Seinfeld was still at his height when it ended. Dumb and Dumber was, what, 1994? So it was like 1997.
Yeah. So it would have went in production like almost like a year after Dumb and Dumber hit. Right. So
yeah. So you're thinking that like, yeah, I think Jeff Daniels maybe did like Arachnophobia in between them or something.
Yeah.
But you would think that like, and then Charlize Theron is in it. She wasn't in much before that.
No.
But you're like, you know, geez, you would think that it would, and Rip Torn is in it. It's one of those movies that you would probably see at the video store and go, wow, this looks really interesting. Yep. And then you take it home and be like, wow, this movie is not that great.
Yeah. Which is funny because that's kind of how we came to, we were trying to pick out a movie to pair with Michael Cimini. And we're like, well, look at this cast. Look at what it's about.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's directed by the same guy. That's serendipitous.
Right. It's directed by the same guy as My Cousin Vinny.
And, you know, like I always say, one of my hopes with this show.
And I think that's even how they promoted it.
Yes. I've not watched the trailer, but I'm sure I'm positive it is. It's the only way they could have possibly marketed this movie.
Right.
But as I've always said to you, one of my hopes with this show is that we discover cool movies that both of us missed for whatever reason.
Right.
And, you know, you always have the hope that maybe this will be this cool movie I've never heard of that I can cherish and show to people in the future. And I kind of hope that maybe it'd be another movie that was even close to being as good as My Cousin Vinny that I just somehow missed.
Right.
And Lord knows this is not it.
No, you can skip this one.
Yeah, it's no shocker there. This one's going right back to the video store right away.
Right away. I mean, both you and I wanted to just like stop watching it in the middle. You're like, this is too silly. I don't know where this is going. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. I don't think at any point in the movie you had a real sense of knowing where the movie was going. You know what I mean?
Like, it's not the worst thing we've watched on this show, but it's close.
It's not as bad as 18 Again. But
very, very little is as bad as 18 Again.
Right. It's still like somewhat watchable, but yeah, it's definitely on the low end of the movies that we've watched. Yeah.
Like it was. I will say I was super disappointed that I disliked it as much as I did.
I'd rather watch Into the Night.
Yeah, well, at least it has David Bowie with a knife in it. Like, there are still really cool things about Into the Night.
Yeah, there's still some really, really cool things.
interesting failure is better than just a complete failure. So,
and this was not an interesting failure.
Yeah. Well, let's go into some of the reasons why Trial and Error was such a debacle. Do you have any information on that?
Okay, so I know one of the things I'll go ahead and reveal now. We've already talked about it, that I'll go ahead and say, because I don't really have a whole lot of information on it. But I do know that the director tried to convince, Jonathan Lynn tried to convince the studio to make it more legally accurate, okay? And so, you know, studios, when you start talking about realism, like, I want to make things real, some of them start getting really scared.
Yeah.
They're like, there's no drama in real. You know, we need to create something. We need to create something zany. We need to go where realism can't go. You know, this is Hollywood. And, you know, you said it in the pre-production, we said it before, like, you know, these producers and these people, like, sometimes don't need to be involved in the creative process. Yeah,
they're not creatives. They're money people.
Right.
They're people wranglers. Mm-hmm. They're not artistic.
Well, and they think they know what the audience wants. Yeah. And instead of, you know, that's what they think they are. They think they're this bridge between the audience and these zany creative people. Yeah. You know what I mean?
One thing I find mind-blowing about this whole situation is Jonathan Lynn had made My Cousin Vinny.
Right.
A very similar movie that was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And beloved by people. Even at that point, 5 years later, it was loved by people.
Yeah.
And they still would take the leash off of him to let him just do what he thought was right. They didn't trust his instincts, even though he got this wonderful little movie and helped a young actress get an Oscar nomination and win.
Right.
And they still didn't trust him. And then to me, that shows you how clueless those producers were.
Right. And to have this stellar, you know, cast of characters and because I still think that you could probably, you know, of the stories or of the lessons that you've learned, like from the movie, of the characters that have changed, you know, in it all, you know, you could really see like, okay, maybe there's something here, but it was just absolute shenanigans in the courtroom. It almost seemed very cartoonish when you compare it to My Cousin Vinny.
It's super silly. And the only parts that are even remotely compelling are the few things that are pretty realistic. Where when he asked for, like, Jeff Daniels' bar card, he's like, I want to see your bar card.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things where they kind of ratchet up the tension of the reality of the situation are the only times it was interesting.
Right. And I thought that, you know, Jeff Daniels' performance was, you know, maybe a bit overacted, you know?
It's not his best work.
No.
For a guy who has done really good comedies and really good dramatic work, this is not the worst. Again, it's not the worst thing he's ever done, but it might be in the running for the worst thing he's ever done.
Yeah, because, I mean, him doubled over in the salt flats, you know, faking, you know, vomiting.
From nerves, yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. That wasn't a laughable moment for me.
It actually just made me feel bad.
Yeah, I was just like, it's not as funny as him sitting on the toilet and
with diarrhea and Dumb and Dumber. Yeah.
You can't recreate those kind of moments. You know what I mean?
You really can't.
And it's kind of like, oh, they're just trying to recreate this moment or whatever.
It's the whole thing felt so misguided.
It was really sort of cheesy, and I really think that it almost made a mockery of the courtroom process.
I felt bad for everyone involved. I really did. And that's no exaggeration,
right?
But I will say on the bright side, it also frames what a triumph My Cousin Vinny is,
right?
Which reveals what a great, because I mean, you have two movies that are so very similar, and one is a disaster, and the other one's this perfect little movie. And it just goes to show you the alchemy of making films. You have all these similar elements and create a diamond in one turn and coal in the other.
Well, like I said, you also have, you know, lawyers, you know, the lawyer kind of defending a known bad guy, a known con man.
Yeah.
And that makes you feel uneasy. I mean, why would you want your main character to defend a sleazy con man?
Yeah, it makes you not care what happens.
Right. I mean, I know it goes into why Jeff Dan, or why the character of what is his name? Charlie
Tuttle.
Charlie Tuttle, like, decides to, like, you know, leave everything behind or whatever. You know, that plays into part of it, but you don't really get that sense of it. You don't really get that sense of weight of, I don't want to be here. I don't want to defend this guy.
Yeah. I don't want to defend this obvious, horrible person.
Right. He just considers that, well, this is what I've got to do. This is my duty because my boss asked me to do it throughout almost the whole film.
Yeah. But and as a viewer, it makes you not care because Rip Torn plays such a terrible character. Unlike My Cousin Vinny, where you know they're innocent and they're just kids who were in over their heads who got railroaded, and you feel bad and you want them to be okay. So again, it goes back to stakes.
Right.
My Cousin Vinny has stakes you care about, and everyone could have died in trial and error. Like they could have all blown up. The building could have blown up in trial and error. They all could have died. I wouldn't have cared.
Well, and also I think like the prosecuting attorney and Charlie Tuttle or Michael Richards or whatever. I mean, it was like kind of like she considered him the enemy, and that's not really the way that lawyers like view each other. Yeah. I mean, it's like they, you know, go in the courtroom, do their thing, and then they all go out to lunch together. You know what I mean? It's like they're all not that they're buddies, but it's just like, yeah, it's a job. Like you go do the thing. Like, you know, where else are you going to hang out with people who understand the law and understand like all these things?
Yeah. And they try to have a shoehorned romantic relationship thing between them. And Michael Richards should never be a romantic lead. Talk about something that's ill-fitting and awkward.
That was just weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he goes over to her house.
Yeah, it's so kind of weird and creepy.
Yeah, it's just... Let's just put it aside. So, okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I know we talked about My Cousin Vinny first, and then we talked about Trial and Error. I am actually going to talk about the facts of Trial and Error first, and then I'll talk about my
cousin. So we can end on a positive note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't have very much. There was not a whole lot of information on Trial and Error. Surprise, surprise.
Because nobody cares about it. What we do for you, our loyal listeners of video culture, with the suffering we do go through for you guys.
So speaking of Dumb and Dumber, in Italy, Trial and Error was released under the title Ancora più Semo. I don't know what it means. I don't know. I can't
pronounce
it. What does
it translate to?
I'm really bad. The title, it's... and in Germany, the title was Noch Dummer. Both titles translate as Even More Dumber.
Because Europe does not care.
This was done to make the audience believe that the movie was a sequel to Dumb and Dumber.
Because Europe does not care about those kinds of things. They are shady when it comes to that sort of thing.
What's that?
Just, you know, the idea of fake sequels to things.
Oh, and, yeah. Yeah.
Like lax copyrights. You know, if they try to do that here, the people who own Dumb and Dumber would be like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah. Jennifer Tilly was originally cast as Billy Tyler.
Jennifer Tilly is amazing. I would have enjoyed the movie more if Jennifer Tilly was in it.
Really? Didn't Charlize Theron?
That's getting more into Matt's personal things. I don't know if I can. But okay. I've got a big like fanboy crush on Jennifer Tilly.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if audiences would have really. Matthew Esser would have.
Yeah. I would have liked it to be half a star more. Instead of just, you know.
I mean, Charlize Theron is so gorgeous in this movie.
Yeah.
All right. Jennifer Coolidge, Alexandria Wentworth, and McNally Seigel all made guest appearances on Seinfeld. So those were the three girls. Jennifer Coolidge, let's go back to my list, played Jackie Truro. Alexandra Wentworth. But anyway, I think she played the wife. Didn't she play the wife?
See, it shows how little this movie stuck with us. And
No. She played Tiffany Whitfield. I don't even know which.
Moving on.
Whatever. Anyway,
Not worth the brain power.
Three of the characters were in Seinfeld. Let's just move on.
Yeah.
I know one of them was Dolores. The wife was Dolores in Seinfeld.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The fiance was Dolores.
And if you guys haven't seen Seinfeld, if you can deal with the fact that it's not very PC in 2019, Seinfeld's an excellent show. Watch it on Hulu.
Yeah, I'm not gonna explain why she's named Dolores. Just look up Seinfeld, Dolores. Mm-hmm. It's probably on YouTube somewhere. You've figured out.
Mulva?
Sorry. I had a friend that used to say that a lot. Anyway, he loves Seinfeld. Anyway.
You know, I just love to make you laugh, Ryan.
Oh, okay. All right. Charlize Theron and Jeff Daniels also appear in 2 Days in the Valley.
A much better film.
A much better. It was the film they made before this one. It was kind of weird. The budget. This is. I'm already to the budget. Like that. These are my whole notes. $25 million. $25 million it took to make this movie.
I guess they had to throw Jeff Daniels through a roof.
Yeah, I guess so. The box office made $15 million.
About $50 million more than it deserved.
Here's the most surprising thing I found out about this movie. Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars.
Roger.
Three stars.
That means it's way above average.
Just remember, he gave Armed and Dangerous 1.5 stars.
Yeah, Armed and Dangerous is way better than this movie.
Okay, here's what he says. Jeff Daniels is invaluable in films like this, as he was in Dumb and Dumber, because he doesn't overplay or sound if he's going for a laugh. Disagree there. Because I think he totally overplayed it. But anyway,
me too.
Michael Richards makes the wise decision to play the courtroom scenes not as a buffoon, but as an intelligent guy who's seen too many courtroom movies. Now, that I probably agree with. He still was kind of buffoonish.
Yes.
But continuing on. I like the love affair between Daniels and Theron characters, and a crucial scene where her eyes are filled with love and forgiveness as she runs in slow motion across the street toward him. I like the little touch that she looked both ways first. And he says, surprising, more movie heroines aren't traffic victims.
That's pretty funny. That's funnier than anything in the actual movie.
Yeah, I did notice that as well. I was like, oh, she looked before she like crossed the street. You know, but yeah, it's kind of, I have no idea why he would have rated 3 stars. New Line must have been sliding him some money.
Don't say that. Let's not do that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But
I won't accuse him of, you know,
of impropriety.
Yeah.
Because, you know, reviews are subjective. It probably just hit him right that on that day, you know?
Right.
Maybe he was in a good mood. Maybe he really likes Charlize Theron as well. He obviously really likes Jeff Daniels.
Well, I mean, I will say, to his credit, Rotten Tomatoes critic score is 51%.
So that means more than half thought it was okay.
Right. But it has a 31% audience score.
Yeah. It's
so always do critics get it right, folks.
No, of course not. Yeah. I say that as a film critic myself.
Yeah.
We really don't.
Yeah, right. I mean, it works both ways. I mean, they can really like a movie that's, you know, not as good. And they can, you know, dog on movies that audiences love. So, you know, deal with it. Okay. So moving on. My Cousin Vinny. It was shot in an actual prison in Gainesville, Georgia. Real prisoners were really there in their cells while Ralph Macchio and...
After you give me so much trouble, if you give me so much grief by not remembering his name.
Mitchell Whitfield. I'm not going to forget that name anymore. Mitchell Whitfield were holding their blankets and walking to their cell, as well as the scene in the basketball court. He said that they were really yelling at them and everything while they were walking to the thing.
It would explain why they were separate in that scene. Like, you notice everyone else is behind fences.
Well, no, but even when they were in the basketball scene, they really were real prisoners behind them as well as real prison guards. So they said that, like, the prisoners did exactly what they asked them to do. They're like, okay, we're going to use you for the scene. And they're like, okay, and they just did what they were told.
I guess it beats the boredom of whatever they were doing that day.
Yeah, they were like, oh, I guess that's pretty neat. So, you know, they don't want to get cut from the film. Yeah. So they're like, yeah, I'll do whatever you ask me to do. Yeah, that's kind of neat. And then many other locations are real, including the newly reopened Sacco Suds convenience store.
It looked like a real Southern grocery store.
Yeah, it was. It went a real Southern grocery store since the mid-50s, and in the early 2000s started to go into disarray and disrepair. There is a video on YouTube where there's a guy that with a video camera that goes and shows you what the Sacco Suds, you know, store looked like at around 2002 or so, which is about 10 years after the movie. But the owners started redoing the store and renovating the store, and they in 2012, and it's now reopened, and they even have pictures and memorabilia from
That's
the
cool,
film,
yeah.
And you too can go to the Sacco Suds and buy some tuna.
Tuna. I was going to say one thing I really appreciate about it, because you and I are both from the South, and when you go into the rural parts of the South, there are grocery stores just like that.
Yeah.
These little like podunk, like painted signs.
Yeah.
In like the really rural areas. So that part felt very authentic. Yeah. Not a lot of the other stuff when they're leading up to the beginning of the movie does, but that really does.
The inspiration for the film's writer, Dale Lawner, and he imagined if your lawyer was somebody who had taken the bar exam several times before passing. And then he also took a road trip to the South, and he had this happen to him. He had his car got stuck in the mud. Every restaurant had grits on the menu. And he heard the unearthly call of the screech owl. So all those things in reality like really happened to him.
And people do love grits here. Yeah. That's for sure.
Also, the scene in the jury selection where the lady, they says, well, how do you feel about corporal punishment? She goes, well, I think it's really belonged to the families. And then she described like what the defendants were accused of. And she goes, fry them. And then he's like, okay, she'll do. He said that was taken from an actual jury selection conversation.
Really?
Yeah. Also, there was a real screech owl that was used in the film. So
that's what they sound like, huh?
Yeah, that's what they sound like. It was a real recording and a when it opens its mouth, it wasn't actual the real screech. They figured out a trick where they could give it like a piece of meat or something like that, and then it would open its mouth. And then, but they said that like when Joe Pesci came out and started firing, like it looked towards him. And then they're like, he went back in and it turned back around and like opened its beak again.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, that was perfect.
It is really well framed.
Yeah. And they said that that was that people swear that it's like a robotic owl. And they're like, no, it just did that.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
just by itself.
Owls don't look for it. When you really look at an owl, it doesn't seem very natural the way its head turns.
Yeah.
So I believe that people believe that was fake. Mm-hmm. It's cool to know that it's real though. That's pretty awesome.
Robert De Niro was Lawner's first choice to play Cousin Vinny, but the Fox president told Lawner that De Niro was not funny.
And then he later on did, you know, meet the parents and made a gazillion dollars.
This is 1992, you know, remember? Sorry about that. That was, all right. So, moving on, Jim Belushi also turned down the role. And he regrets it ever since. And also considered for the role were Danny DeVito, John Lovitz, and Andrew Dice Clay.
Some of those would have been okay. Some of those would have been terrible.
Andrew Dice Clay seems to think that it was like he was contacted, like it was written for him. Like this was, you know, but Fox, like he thinks that Fox kind of like shoved it to other people because the other movie that he was in like did so poorly.
The Avengers of Ford Fairlane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew Dice Clay's terrible. I'll go on record saying that.
Joe Pesci won the Oscar for Goodfellas the year before, and he won it actually during filming. So he actually flew to do the Oscars, and then he came back. So there's also a thing where they're, the scene where he, you know, was in the where he actually gets a good night's rest when he's in jail or whatever. Mm-hmm. He gets thrown in jail for the contempt, and then he says to Mona Lisa, don't bail me out. You know, maybe I'll get a good night's rest.
He sleeps through the prison riot.
Yeah, he sleeps. So, but they said that, like, since he had the Oscar, they shot where they panned to him sleeping, and he's, like, holding the Oscar. And they said they actually sent that to the dailies back to Fox, you know, whatever, like the shots they did that day just to show Fox or whatever.
Probably, yeah. It might be on some deleted footage somewhere.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. Maybe not. But yeah, I thought that would have been a funny thing to like add at the end of the movie or something, like, or maybe add in the extra scenes or something. Joe Pesci also learned how to do the card trick for the film. Yeah. He insisted that it be a one shot with no cuts because he wanted the audience to believe, just like the characters, that he was really doing the card trick.
That's one of the best scenes of the film when he's explaining that the prosecution's defense has to be flimsy because it's not true, and he explains how it's like a card trick, how they're trying to distract. Yeah. And he's doing a really complicated like card trick while he's explaining it. It's one of the best scenes in the entire film. It's phenomenal.
Right, where he takes a card, he shows it to him off the deck, just takes the first card off the deck, and it's like an ace. And he's like, you know, they're going to show you this. They're going to say that it's, you know, but he's like, they're going to say this is a brick, you know, and it's like
shaped like a brick. It looks like a brick if you look at it from a certain angle. But if you look at it from another angle, it's nothing.
Yeah, and he turns it around, and it's a Joker card.
Yeah.
You know, and you never see him switch it. And it was beautifully done.
Yeah.
It was beautiful done.
It's all filmed in one shot. You're right. It's a great, great sequence.
All right. Also, the studio wanted to cut Mona Lisa Vito from the film.
That is wild. Because I'm going to be a little bit of a boy right now. She's gorgeous. And it's a great performance.
Well, I think this was before they knew, like, who was going to play him. I think just the writing of the character.
They wanted to cut the character out?
Not that they wanted to cut her, like, after they made the film.
They wanted to cut her out of the script stage.
Yeah, she was out of the script.
That's still kind of a mistake, because their relationship was kind of the heart of the movie.
Well, they felt that it was stereotypical of, like, feeling like a neglected girlfriend, you know? And they're, like, kind of made people feel uncomfortable, whatever. So, but Lawners was like, no, we have to keep this character. That's the only thing that keeps, like, you know, Vinny sort of balanced. You know what I mean? And so he was like, so he figured out a way to keep her in, and that's where he came up with the idea of the mechanic and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So, because I'm sure he might have like grabbed a mechanic or something like that from, I don't know how the original script was, but that's kind of the idea. So anyway, they also wanted Lorraine Bracco instead of Marissa Tomei, because Marissa Tomei hadn't really done much.
No, she hadn't. And Lorraine Bracco probably would have been more age appropriate at that time to play Pesci's girlfriend, and she was an established actress.
Yeah,
but it's just hard to imagine anyone else playing that character now, because I mean, it's such a great performance from Tomei. I can't picture anyone else doing it and doing it well.
No, in fact, we already said she won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. So, director Jonathan Lynn cast his friend Austin Pendleton, who plays the public defender. But, like I said before, Pendleton has a stutter in real life. So, when he has those opening statements, you can actually see in the background, like, Pesci and Ralph Macchio and Mitchell Whitfield, like, covering their mouths and kind of doubling over. Because they're, like, they're trying to hold their laughter in because they're trying to laugh so much. And he said at one scene, I'm covering my mouth. He's like, I'm not. He's like, it kind of looks like I'm about to, you know, that I'm trying to stop myself from crying. He's like, no, I'm trying to keep myself from laughing. So, you can actually, I watched the scene and you can see him like double over. It's really funny. In the original script, Vinny was supposed to be dyslexic, which explains why it took so many times for Vinny to pass the bar exam. But the director, Jonathan Lynn, could not figure out a good way to portray dyslexia on film.
Yeah.
He goes, this change made Vinny seem not so bright, which the writer Lawner was not very happy with, but I think in the end it really sort of worked out.
You know what I mean? There's different kinds of intelligence.
Yeah. I think it says a lot about, like, I'm not book smart, but I can figure this other stuff out or whatever.
Yeah. Right? I'm wise.
Yeah. And then we also mentioned Jonathan Lynn has a law degree from Cambridge. He wanted to get the leading procedure correct. He watched a murder trial in Monticello, Georgia for inspiration, and even took the pronunciation from the lawyer of hyenas directly from that experience. He also took the most famous line in the movie where Vinny talks about the two Utes.
The what now?
The two Utes. Yeah. What is a Ute? The youths. So that actually came from a normal conversation between Lynn and Joe Pesci, where they were like just talking about the movie. And, you know, Jonathan Lynn is British. And so Joe Pesci, with his heavy like Jersey accent, was like, what? what? And he was like, use. And he was like, you know, that's funny. That's, we should use that in the line because, you know, they're going to be from the north and this guy's going to be from the south. So we should keep that. So, yeah, that was added, you can think, to a British director not understanding the Jersey accent. Lynn states that it took the studio to have faith in making it legally accurate. It is so legally accurate that it is number 3 of the American Bar Association's lists of greatest legal movies. Number
That's impressive.
3.
Yeah.
Vincent Gambini also came in at number 12 on the list of the association's list of the greatest fictional lawyers who aren't Atticus Finch.
So, yeah, because who can compete with To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah, that's the number 1 movie of the American Bar Association, and number 2 is the movie 12 Angry Men,
which is I highly recommend both those films.
And just for, you know, when I was asking people like, what do you think the number 1 American Bar Association movie is? And I got a lot of responses of A Few Good Men. You Good Men has a lot of legal inaccuracies, even for a military trial. So it came in at number 14.
Okay.
My Cousin Vinny is actually used to teach law.
Well, so we talk about the way it structures it is so good. It doles it out in perfect little chunks.
So Chief Judge Merrick Garland of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in a 2019, who is now a Merrick Garland is actually now no, he's not. But anyway, he said that Vincent Gambini taught a master class in cross examination. The John Marshall Law School professor Alberto Bernabe wrote that Vinny is terrible at the things that we do teach in law school, but very good at the things we don't. So what he means is how to interview clients, gather facts, prepare a theory of a case, to negotiate, to know when to ask a question and when to remain silent, to cross-examine a witness forcefully but with charm in order to expose the weakness in their testimony. Because, like, you remember, like, this makes me think of the scene with the glasses, you know, where he was, like, very, you know, he knew that, like, this lady couldn't really see
that.
Has
got bad eyesight, yeah.
Right, but he
did
it. He's
very polite in the way he asked her.
Right, and he, you know, and he has the, like, the tape measure, which, like, demonstrates to the jury, like, you know,
how far away she was.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the other things that they said that he knew how to use to know that his audience wasn't the judge; it was really like the jury. So Lynn, Jonathan Lynn, who's the director, he's an actual opponent of capital punishment, and he believes the film expresses an anti-death penalty message without preaching to the people and demonstrates the unreliability of eyewitness testimony.
The subtlety of it is one thing that makes it really work.
Right. Yeah. I think it really exposes eyewitness testimony a lot. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's another good thing about the movie 12 Angry Men, which I recommend you should watch too. Mm-hmm. That's one of the key points of that film is that eyewitness testimony is not reliable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So if you were ever a jury, if you ever find yourself on a jury, please remember that. Okay.
People misremember things,
and people think that other people are them, but you know it really. I think that any eyewitness testimony is almost circumstantial.
Yes. Because people have bad memories. If you've learned anything from this show, we illustrate all the time how bad memories can be.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And I mean, and you should know too. I mean, how many times has one actor been mistaken for another actor?
Exactly. Or we get a year wrong or a title wrong. Or so, I mean, it's fallible. The human memory is super fallible.
So the budget for this movie, for My Cousin Vinny, was $11 million,
which is pretty cheap considering.
Very cheap.
Yeah.
It grossed $64.1 million.
It was a big hit.
This is why in our last episode we talked about Master and Commander, you know, was $150 million and made $200 million. So really, if you minus those out, like, it only netted $50 million.
That's not counting advertising.
Right.
So, yeah.
And this movie budget was $11 million, and it grossed $64 million. So it made, it netted almost the same amount.
Yeah, that's what you call a big success.
Right. And that's the kind of movie that, you know, these studios are really after. Yeah. You know what I mean? They want that, like, large sum. So on a percentage-wise, it weighed it made way more than Master and Commander did.
It did, yeah.
So, yeah. So would you want to spend, you know, $150 million to get $50 million? Or do you want to spend $11 million to get $50 million?
Yeah, exactly.
Roger Ebert gave it 2.5 stars.
You're making that up.
I am not. I am not so, making this so up.
He liked Trial and Error.
Trial and Error, he gave 3 stars. My Cousin Vinny, he gave 2.5 stars.
Okay, we're going to stop using Roger Ebert.
This this makes me question everything I ever read about Roger Ebert.
Yeah, I'm a little flabbergasted. Maybe we should start using Leonard Maltin.
Leonard Maltin also gave it, well, I don't know. I didn't read Leonard Maltin's. Yeah. I know he gave Trial and Error 3 stars as well.
Well, then forget him too. No,
Leonard Maltin actually grades on a 5-star.
Okay, well, that's still 3 stars for that. Yeah. That means it was above average.
Right.
3 stars is good. So I don't know what I believe in anymore now, Ryan. You've shaken my belief system to its very core.
Roger Ebert says, My Cousin Vinny is a movie that meanders along going nowhere in particular. Then lightning strikes. I didn't get much involved in it, and yet individual moments in some of the performances were very funny. It's the kind of movie home video was invented for. Not worth the trip to the theater, but slam it into the VCR, and you get your rental's worth.
Yeah. I disagree.
A lot.
But, you know, I imagine if he reevaluated it, if he had seen it again.
Yeah. Now, granted, this was 1992.
Yeah.
A lot of movies that came out that year.
Yeah, and I guarantee if you showed him his review of Trial and Error later in life, he probably would have been embarrassed by it.
I mean, that's the only thing that I think is, like, they have to watch so many movies and do so many reviews. Like, and it's just like some, like, you know, just like they say, like, they'll, you know, grade a movie with 4 stars and then, like, it's, you know, do terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, you grade a movie, like, really bad and it does well. I mean, I think they start second-guessing themselves as well. Like, our audience is really going to respond to this, you know?
Well, and you also don't know what'll stick with you, too. Like I said, I mean, I review films. I've been paid to do so before. And there were times when I reviewed a movie and gave it an okay score. But when it came time to think of what the best films of the year were, that movie I gave an okay score to 7 months ago, when I thought back on it, I'm like, oh, that movie was better than I thought. Let me rewatch it before I can pile my best of list. And lo and behold, that movie I thought was 2.5 stars or 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a 4-star movie once I had time to sit with it for a while.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've done that with records, too. I mean, it's like an artist I really like. And, like, I'll get their new album, and I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
You know, but then after that, like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks go by, and I'm like, well, let me listen, or a month go by, and I'm like, well, they got that one song on the radio. Let me listen to it again.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, you know, I really get it.
Yeah. And the inverse of that is you can really like something initially, and then 6 months to a year later or 5 years later, you're like, why did I like that? That's kind of embarrassed I like that now.
Yeah, like I have albums in my collection, and I go back and listen, and I'm like, I listened to this, like, you know, anyway. Well, to its redeeming credit, Rotten Tomatoes critic score for My Cousin Vinny is 85%, which is certified fresh, and 87% audience score. Which is a very close match.
Yeah.
I mean, a few percentage points for Rotten Tomatoes is not too much of a big deal to me.
Yeah. But again, I just have never met anyone who didn't like it.
I don't see what you really don't like or what to really expect out of a movie like that from the 90s. That's, like, very accurate. There's only a couple of inaccuracies in the film.
I guess if you didn't like Joe Pesci, I mean, it's a lot of Joe Pesci. And if you don't dig on what he's doing, I can see not liking it. But I don't know. I think, like I said, I think it's a perfect little movie.
Right. I think so, too. There was a lot of talk of a sequel. It did so well.
I would have watched that.
Yeah. And in 2012, a sequel was written by Lawner, which Marissa Tomei actually signed on before she dropped out, but it involved Vinnie practicing law in England, but the script was eventually dropped.
I always have the idea of movies that almost were fascinating, and that's one that I've never heard of before. Now I'm gonna go see if I can't look that up and find the script.
There is an unreleased Bollywood version. Did you know that?
Unreleased. I did not, but that's not surprising because Bollywood loves to remake movies.
Right?
There are tons of, like, if you think of a popular movie here in America, there's probably a Indian version of it.
Well, the reason it wasn't is because there was kind of a legal battle. Yeah. It's called Banda Ya Bindayas Hai, which is translates to "This Guy is Fearless." It was directed by Ravi Chopra.
I actually know that director.
Okay, the studio acquired the rights in 2007 from Fox, but then in 2009, Fox sought damages of $1.4 million, and the reason why is because they only initially agreed to a quote loosely based film on My Cousin Vinny, but Fox thought it was quote substantial reproduction. And so eventually the legal battle ended with the Indian studio settling for $200,000, and the film is still yet unreleased.
I'd be curious to see, because I do watch Indian films.
Well, good luck finding it.
Yeah, I'm sure I can't, but there is a big remake culture in India, and a lot of times they're not even legal authorized remakes. They'll just take a concept and then do it, and then act surprised when they get sued later on.
Yeah. Author Lawrence Kelter began My Cousin Vinny novel series with a book called Back to Brooklyn, and it depicts Vinny at home with Mona Lisa as his investigator in the spirit of the Thin Man series.
I've never heard of that. That's pretty cool sounding.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that would be fascinating.
Yeah,
you know, just like we said, like, you know, even I think that even in Roger Ebert's review and reading all of it, because I read through all of it, I'm like, what did he not like? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he thought it was a little far-fetched, and he just thought it was a little
trial and error.
Yeah, like disjointed. Yeah, but anyway. But yeah. He did say the one thing that he liked was the play between Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei, and he said exactly what we said, which is we'd love to see more of them, like, go off and do other things. So anyway, you know, his review wasn't all bad, but I still don't understand
that. It's mind-blowing. I wasn't expecting it.
And then my favorite fun fact of this movie, my favorite. In 1998, Pesci recorded an album called Vincent LaGuardia Gambini Sings Just For You.
Yes.
Which contains the songs Yo, Cousin Vinny and Take Your Love and Shove It.
Have you ever heard it? It's not good.
No, it's very silly.
Yes.
It's very sort of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
It's very kind of what you would hear on like a morning radio, like zany morning radio show or something like that. It's really kind of a funny, fun movie. It's almost like listening, like it reminds me of like listening to like William Shatner records or something like that. Yeah, no, it's not something that you go, oh, let's put on like, oh, you know, hey, we're driving in the car. Let me put this in. It's kind
of
like
a novelty record.
Right. It's very novelty.
Yeah.
But it was in 1998, and the album cover portrays Pesci in the red suit, similar to the Usher suit he wore in the film, like the red one. And it is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it's like this big band kind of take your love and shove it up your big fat ass. great. It's absolutely great.
Yeah, because Pesci's a funny man. He
really is. Yeah, which is really funny because he was in Goodfellas like right before. You know, he's like kind of a wise guy kind of guy.
Yeah.
And then he comes and does this movie, you know, and really changed his career path, you know?
Because he had great comedic timing, and he later did a lot of more comedic work, and he's great.
Yeah.
I mean, he's retired now, and that's a shame. I mean, supposedly he's going to be doing a movie with De Niro this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out. It's going to be a Netflix film directed by Scorsese called The Irishman. It's one of the, you know, Netflix is throwing tons of money behind original movies. So
they get Scorsese.
Yeah, and De Niro and Pesci. Yeah, so that's one thing to look forward to. I can't remember when it's coming out. Since we record these things so far in advance, it may even be out by the time this podcast comes out.
Geez. Okay.
But yeah, so he's been in retirement for a long time. So, and that's a shame because He's wonderful. He's one of our great character actors.
Yeah.
Love Joe Pesci.
In all the, Goodfellas and Casino.
Yeah, yes.
And
The Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon.
Movies. Yeah, he's great.
Is absolutely great. And you know, matter of fact, I mean, this is one of the few movies that, I didn't have to, rent from Amazon or any, I have the DVD. I mean, that I bought the DVD, long ago. I mean, it's such a great movie.
Before your journey into this.
Right, which means if you buy it, you want to watch it over and over and over again. So to the age-old question, do you return it right away, or do you keep it an extra day? I mean, I own the DVD. Yeah,
this is when you'd buy in love.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
It's obvious what Trial and Error is.
It is a classic movie, and adults to kids saw this movie in the night. I mean, except for a handful of the F-bombs.
Well, yeah.
It is rated PG-13. I think it's even, very sort of family friendly,
kind of movie. Yeah, I mean, it was on TV a lot when I was younger.
Yeah, like TNT and USA and stuff like that. Yeah,
I mean, it's a movie that again, my entire family, my family likes it.
Yeah,
my grandmother likes it.
I mean, my dad didn't watch a lot of movies at all.
Yeah,
he did not watch a lot movies, and he liked this movie.
Yeah.
So
I think almost everyone does.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. So recommendations.
Yes. So my recommendation is the movie that stars Eddie Murphy
Jonathan Lynn.
Jonathan Lynn did directly after this movie called The Distinguished Gentleman. And it's a really sort of similar movie where Eddie Murphy kind of plays this con man kind of character, but he has the same last name as this congressman. And so he says, well, I'm going to put my name on the ballot and then maybe people will pull the lever for not my name because they're going to think they're voting for the other guy.
Yeah.
And then he winds up getting elected and going to Washington as a, U.S. House of Representatives for California. And it's really, it also stars the guy that plays Trotter. What's his name? It also stars, what's his name? Jim Lane Smith. Stars Lane Smith. And it's really kind of like a same sort of thing like this. Like you're kind of following with Eddie Murphy. You don't know really how Washington works. But you kind of learn with him as it goes along.
A similar structure, yeah.
Yeah, and he kind of masters the kind of one hand washes the other kind of, politics, of. So, yeah, I very, very funny movie. I think it's, one we should probably do at some point, I think.
Well, we'll definitely do more Eddie Murphy at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He's definitely a guy who's underappreciated nowadays.
Well, I think that's one of the lost classics. Like I said, I think, of all the movies that when they debuted at number one.
Yeah.
That was the first movie that didn't in that, long series of runs. And it's really unfortunate because I think it's one of those forgotten classics.
I kind of agree. I've not seen it since it came out, but I have fond memories of it.
Okay.
So for my recommendation, I'm also going to recommend another Jonathan Lynn movie.
All right.
I'm going to recommend Sergeant Bilko with Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very fun movie. It's based on the old TV show Sergeant Bilko. Basically, Steve Martin plays the titular Sergeant Bilko. He's a military man. He's also a bit of a con artist, but not a con artist in a way where he's conning people. He's conning the government so him and his boys can be slackers, basically.
Yeah, because he himself is like a slacker.
Yeah, he's a slacker. His guys are kind of slackers. And it's just kind of a fun hangout movie where you hang out with Steve Martin and kind of his full, just his comedy jerk mode where he's kind of in that jerk vein. And he's fun. It's light. And it's so funny. It's something no one talks about anymore.
Right.
But it's a fun Steve Martin film. It's one of his better later movies,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's a very, again, fun, watchable film.
Yeah, I like it. It's been a while since I've seen
I like it a lot.
Sergeant Bilko. You know what? We ought to do another Jonathan Leland series and do but maybe do both those movies or something like that.
Let's let in for when we get to the maybe the '40s on this episode.
Maybe a while down the road, we'll give you a chance to watch it first, so maybe you can gather your thoughts. So those are our recommendations. Well, thanks very much for listening, people. We'd love to hear from you. Hit us up on Twitter, comment in the comment section on our website.
And, you know, guys, you know, thanks for again for listening to this. I think it's time we draw this court case to a close. I think the jury can rest, and we're going to bid you good evening. I'm Matthew Estrie.
And I'm Ryan Acree.
Go watch some movies, guys.
Case closed. Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
Funny thing happened to William and Stanley on their way to college.
At what point did you shoot the clerk?
They got framed for murder.
Whoa! Wait a minute!
Now, two kids from New York are in deep trouble.
It's time to make your phone calls.
The clan's here. They're inbred. They sleep with their sisters.
In the deep South.
Some of them do.
And only one man can save them.
We need to call an attorney, a great attorney.
He's not your typical hero.
We got an attorney in the family.
Great, who?
He's...
my cousin Vinny.
You sticking like a sore thumb around here.
Oh, yeah, you blend.
You graduated from law school 6 years ago. What have you been doing since?
Studying for the bar. That's a lot of studying. What's this over here?
You never heard of grits?
Sure. I just actually never seen a grit before.
It's his first case.
Now, didn't I tell you to dress appropriately?
You were serious about that?
The way you handled that judge, oh, you're a smooth talker. You are.
It's their last chance.
The two utes.
Did you say utes?
Yeah, two utes.
What is a ute?
But with Vinny's style...
I wore this ridiculous thing for you.
And Vinny's girlfriend...
We agreed to get married as soon as you won your first case. My biological clock is ticking like this. And the way this case is going, I ain't never getting married.
They're dead meat.
May I have permission to treat Ms. Beetle as a hostile witness?
You think I'm hostile? Now wait till you see me tonight.
Joe Pesci is my cousin Vinny.
You two know each other?
Yeah, she's my fiancée.
Well, that certainly explains the hostility.